Good evening, darklings. Tonight we venture into the vast, mysterious realms of the ancient and unknown. Imagine secrets of the cosmos hidden within our very Earth, places of power where energy surges and portals may lie in wait, lost civilizations, whispers of stargates, and legends of contact with beings not of this world, or perhaps not even of this dimension. Our guest tonight, author and researcher Mike Ricksecker, has been on a quest to uncover these mysteries. From the hidden star gates of Egypt to stone circles steeped in energy, from the secrets of the American Southwest to the remnants of Atlantis, he's delved into what ancient cultures knew about crossing boundaries between worlds. His work, Portal to the Stars, the new book, takes us on a journey across centuries and realms, searching for the knowledge they possessed and the mysteries they left behind. Could it be that these portals offer a pathway to the stars, or even transformation for those daring enough to explore them? Let's hold hands and walk through this together, my friends, into the unknown as we unlock ancient wisdom and see where the journey takes us. Right here on the very best in paranormal talk radio, I'm Dave Schrader. This is the Paranormal 360, and joining us now, Mike Ricksecker. Mike, thanks for coming back to the show.
Hey, absolutely. Thanks for having me back, Dave. And, you know, I need you to do that intro for me all the time. That was really nice.
I'll cut it, and we'll send it to you. You could just have it played out in front of every one of your live appearances. I love having you on. I know we just had you a month or two ago, and what I love about the work that you do is you're always investigating, always researching, always writing, and we could have you on probably five, six, seven times a year and be able to cover completely different topics. But I want to dive into the concepts of some of this because I think it's fascinating. Now, stargates. This is something that people have talked about, heard about, and, you know, maybe their only reference point is a sci-fi movie and successful TV series. But what exactly is a stargate?
Yeah, absolutely. Most people, when they think of Stargate, they think of the film and the television shows and all of that. And it's great sci-fi. It's great, you know, movie telling, storytelling, and all of that. But really what we're talking about here with stargates, we really have to go to the root of it all, which is when we start talking about portals and what portals actually are. And even our science has recognized that, yes, there are portals that are occurring in nature. Primarily, they show us the portals that are right there in space, right outside our planet, that they call X points. And these portals, and they've been studying them for 9 years with satellites. And these portals open and close at varying times. They emerge in varying sizes. And what's interesting is they don't have a predictive model for this, you know, even though they've been studying them for so long. They don't know when they're going to open, how long they're going to be open for, and how big they are. And basically what these type of portals do is they allow the solar wind to access the Earth at a much quicker rate. So we have portals that are naturally occurring in nature. A stargate would be an intelligent being's ability to harness portals and be able to actually have them open and close at their will and be able to go to wherever it is that they're trying to get to.
Now, I know that there's been a lot said when you're using harmonics, right, and infrasound, that maybe there is a way to create a rift or a tear in the space-time continuum, wormhole, if you will, that will allow us to extract information or perhaps even broadcast into. What do you make of the scientific aspect of that? Do you think that there is legitimacy to that, or is that more just, you know, theoretical?
Yeah, using harmonics or sound technology would be one way to do it. You know, we look at our ancient world and they were using a lot of this different type of technology. And a lot of it was through stone, you know, actually planting these large stones into the ground to create these stone circles and what have you. And it's been measurable, the type of energy that these stones actually emanate. And some of them are not only energetically aligned, but also harmonically aligned.
I just got back from 10 days in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's captivating to be there. You see these beautiful landscapes, things that you've seen in the movies 1,000 times. But when you're there, a photograph cannot even begin to capture the beauty and the majesty of the rolling hills, the lush green. And you go and you kind of ingratiate yourself into their culture. And we visited what is known as a fairy farm, which to a lot of us here in the United States is something that sounds pleasant. We roll our eyes at, and, oh, that's cute. They take it so seriously. And they brought us at one point to this nexus point, which they call a portal of where these two trees cross over one another. And they believe that by going through that, you actually enter the fairy or the fey realm. And part of it, I think, well, you know, how much of this is to really kind of placate the visitors that come? And talking to the owner of this fairy farm, talking to people from that culture, they take it almost deadly seriously that there is something to this concept and that it can be extremely exciting yet terrifying in the same way, and that these portals do exist and people have been known to go through them and never be seen again.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some really amazing legend and lore concerning these fairy rings or locations in which they believe people can pass into the fairy realm. And yeah, there is a certain stigma that goes along with that because of, you know, the legends of fairies, little people, that sort of thing. So people, yes, do kind of roll their eyes. But you had Jacques Vallée in the 1960s with his book Passport to Magonia, which was a landmark work because it showed how a lot of these stories and legends of fairies and other beings are so very closely related to our UFO abduction stories that we have today, that, you know, we may actually be talking about the same type of phenomenon, but it's just in a different context of our culture. So we may have pulled away from the idea of fairies, but that could now be the same phenomena, but still something interdimensional in nature that might have something to do with extraterrestrials or even ultra-terrestrials, which are really just other beings and life forms living alongside us on this planet in another dimension.
I want to dive into that element when we come back. We've got to take a quick break. Mike Ricksecker, our guest this evening, his brand new book is called Portal to the Stars, Inside Stargates, Atlantis, and Secrets of Ancient Egypt. We have a link for Mike and for his website on today's program guide. We'll be back with more right after this. Welcome back. We are your home for the strange and supernatural every Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m. Join me, your host, Dave Schrader, right here on the Paranormal 360. Mike Ricksecker, my guest this evening, his new book, Portals to the Stars, Inside Stargates, Atlantis, and Secrets of Ancient Egypt. And we'll be talking about Atlantis and ancient Egypt and more in the second hour as well. But you talk about interdimensional beings or multidimensional beings. Mike, people that have been a fan of the Marvel movies are kind of getting a grasp of that now, seeing the multidimensional possibilities. But again, it's always done in a sci-fi contextual way. Does science actually advocate for the fact, or I shouldn't say advocate, but do they actually believe that there are multiple existences that are taking place around us? Or is this, again, just the ideals of science fiction writers?
Well, it's different than this idea of, you know, there are millions or infinite numbers of ourselves running around out there. But the idea that there are multiple dimensions and these sorts of things, these are absolutely within the scope of science. Science has shown us that we have up to 11 hyperspatial dimensions, 0 through 10, and we are currently in the fourth, which is what we call time. And all the other dimensions below us, 3, 2, 1, 0. Zero is a point. One's a line, two's a plane. Three, of course, 3D objects, and 4, time. All those are accessible to us. But the ones above us, 5, 6, 7, 8, and so forth, are not. But that doesn't mean they don't exist. We just don't have the physical geometry to be able to really experience it. Although sometimes it seems we may get a glimpse of something from another dimension. Now,
which is what they've kind of talked about with the CERN generator, right? That they've talked about firing up CERN a few times, and they're finding really interesting quantifiable evidence that there are other particles, there are other levels that exist.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you find, well, they're even taking that and trying to create things in the lab, like their own wormholes and things like this in the lab, which they actually have been successful in doing a couple of years ago. So you know, it's very small on the quantum level, but this is something science is definitely an advocate for, and they're trying to figure more out.
When we look at the larger scope of this with things like the portals, ley lines, power grids, along those aspects of being able to follow certain geographical spots that seem to have some kind of power. I know that there's even talk that Walt Disney chose the place in California because there are ley lines of power that intersect in that area in Anaheim, and that he wanted to take full advantage of that positivity and energy. If my reading and memory is right, I think it's right underneath the carousel is where they said that there is a huge power point. And he believed that by having this centrifugal merry-go-round above it, that it was pumping out energy, or that they were harnessing part of the energy of that. And I know it sounds insane, but there's quite a few articles and books that have referenced this. What is your take of these ley lines? I mean, are there any scientific proof to the concepts that there are these energetic rings around our planet, these things that intersect, and where we find them in these cross sections, there are more types of strange activity?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's interesting that you bring up the Disney source, because yeah, there's a lot of hidden symbolism there at Disney. It's on the 33rd parallel, so you have Club 33 and all of that sort of stuff going on there. But yes, what we commonly call ley lines, and I always say ley lines is the layman's term for telluric currents, because that's really what we're talking about, is the Earth's energy grid, which is measurable. It is something that you know, scientists have gone out to these different locations. They have actually been able to measure these things. And what this current is, you know, it all goes back down to the Earth's core, which is a molten ball of iron that's spinning around, and it creates a magnetic field, which is a wonderful thing because it protects us from the solar wind. You know, we would be fried. We have long since been fried if we didn't have that magnetic protection. So this is a good thing. But as it passes through the mantle and the crust of the Earth, it interacts with different metals and minerals. And depending on the type of metal or mineral and the quantity of the deposit, it creates these different localized magnetic fields that you are able to actually go out there and measure. And this is really where strange things happen. And the ley lines come into place because the ancients knew of this energy. This was something they were able to detect, and they were building their ancient sites of power, whether they're stone circles, pyramids, and all these other structures on top of. And they just so succinctly lined up that 100 years ago, Alfred Watkins went out there and kind of made this observation and wrote a book called The Old Straight Tracks, you know, noticing, hey, all these things lined up. And it was kind of that knowledge that had been lost to time that we rediscovered, oh yeah, these things line up, and this is why, and it's because of that Earth energy.
Do you think that there is something to the concept that where these intersection points take place, that is accessible, or that we will find a way to connect with our past or perhaps our future through interdimensional portals or wavelengths? Will we be able to manipulate the geomagnetic principles or the electromagnetic principles so that we can allow ourselves to see through these veils, to interact with different dimensions, different realities?
Yeah, I believe so. And I think that's something that the ancients were trying to do with these different sites. And yeah, those places where the lines cross, the conductivity discontinuities, or what we commonly call nodes, those are more more energetic hotspots. So like the Great Pyramid of Giza, really the whole Giza Plateau is built on top of one of these. And you know, there was, a few years ago, there were some articles that came out, some peer-reviewed scientific papers about how, yes, the Great Pyramid of Giza was harnessing, or still is, to a degree, harnessing the energy of the Earth. And so, yeah, these were locations that, the ancients were using for, whether it was healing purposes. They certainly conducted ceremony at many of these locations. They were entering into altered states of consciousness, a lot of these different things.
You know, and it sounds, I understand to the layperson, it sounds absurd. And I just went to Egypt last year, And we got to visit many of the different pyramids. We went in early morning hours, like 4 o'clock in the morning with our tour group, and we were visiting the Great Pyramids and such. And at one point we were in one of them, and the tour leader said, let's sit down and try to connect with the energy here. And she had everybody sit down. We were behind one of the sarcophagus, I think, in the Great Pyramid. And she, you know, had us with our crossed legs. And I'm like, there's no way this is going to happen. I've got bad knees. I'm not going to. And if I sit down, there's no way I'm getting back up. And she, you know, she was very esoteric about everything. And, oh, the energy's here. And I tried. I crossed my legs. I sat there. And we sat in this kind of meditative state for about 40 minutes as she was leading us through it. The strangest thing, Mike, I was able to not only unfold my legs and stand back up without help, but I did notice that my back and chronic headaches were non-existent when I was in this place. And I stood there. I'm like, this is crazy, right? I mean, is this some kind of hypnotic suggestion? Because I'm still feeling like I'm in the skeptical brain set for this. Yet I can't explain why my body does not feel fatigued or sore sitting in one spot for 45 minutes with my legs intertangled like I was 5 years old at grade school.
Yeah, that's a perfect example of how that energy can, it can help your body. That's one of the things that they used it for. Another great location where you can really feel that energy. And you said you're just out in Ireland. I don't know if you guys went to Drombeg Stone Circle at all, but it's a smaller stone circle. It's an axial stone circle. So it has one of the horizontal pillars there lying down on its side. And there's a few of the stones missing, but when you walk through what they call them the portal stones, you walk through there and you stand right in the middle. And just when you talk, you can feel the reverberation of the stones. It's really quite amazing. I looked at that, or really just kind of experienced it. And okay, I'm just talking here and I can feel that resonance coming back at me. It had the effect of almost being like in a bubble or a fishbowl or something like that. And it just got to wonder, okay, imagine here now, back in the 2000 years ago when it was an active site, the people of that era doing their ceremony and doing their chants, and how much more that would have just resonated with all of the stones there, not weathered down. It just would have been amazing. And again, you know, that would have been something where, depending on the chant that you do, we were talking harmonics and sound technology earlier, you know, you get the right frequency going. And yes, you could do things like, you know, heal people or enter into these different states of consciousness, or even, we're taking a step further, activate something like a portal.
We have to take our break. We'll come back. We'll continue our discussion. Mike Ricksecker on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline with us for both hours this evening as we discuss portals to the stars, inside Stargates, Atlantis, and secrets of ancient Egypt. That continues right here on the Paranormal 360. We're back. I'm Dave Schrader. This is the Paranormal 360. And joining me on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, Mike Ricksecker, our guest this evening. All right, Mike, now looking through history and through the writings, I know there's been a lot that's been said, right? We can find that there are historical references and diaries of mariners coming across strange things out in the middle of the ocean, sometimes strange creatures, sometimes strange lights in the sky. Have we ever come across legitimate documentation of portals, of things? I know the story of Admiral Byrd visiting the Antarctic and finding a hole to like a center Earth has been out there, and there's absolutely no proof to back that up. It's just hearsay, or is it? Is there more to that kind of story and the things that are going on than many of us know?
Yeah, the challenge with Admiral Byrd's story, and I do talk about this actually in the book, is, yeah, it's from a diary that was discovered after his death. So, you know, you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt in a way. But if this is legitimately his diary, then it provides a very, very intriguing story. But yeah, like I said before earlier, you know, we do have the, you know, the X points off of the outside the planet, which we know are portals. But if you look at the way that works, where it's that interaction between the Earth's magnetism and the solar wind, well, that is an interaction that happens all the way down to the surface of the planet. So that gives us the potential for these types of portals to open up anywhere. And we do have a lot of interesting story about missing people, missing airplanes, these sorts of things. Bruce Gernon talking about what he called an electronic fog, which morphed into a tunnel that he zipped through and all of a sudden ended up half an hour ahead of time in his flight in 1970. So you do have these sorts of anecdotal stories, people that, get lost in the wilderness where they say, ones that come back, because some, of course, don't. But they'll say something like, yeah, I was on the path. I heard a noise off onto the side, off the path. I took two steps out into the woods, took a look around, couldn't find what the noise was, turned around, and the path was suddenly gone. And so we have to wonder, okay, did they step into some sort of portal that maybe whisked them off to somewhere else in the wilderness, another point in time, these sorts of things.
Let me give just a quick call out for this, folks. If you have Max streaming service, check out the movie Caddo Lake, C-A-D-D-O Lake, Caddo Lake. It is a brand new movie. I believe it's produced by M. Night Shyamalan, but it's an interesting movie that deals with some of these concepts. I thought it was fascinating. Definitely one out of one being it sucked, five, it's amazing. I gave it about a 4.5 Phantom review. I love that movie. And it's a real place that exists in Texas. However, the story certainly manipulates that idea. But the concept that maybe there are these rifts, these things that take place where people are vanishing and reappearing in other places, that may not be so far-fetched. I actually visited, I believe it's in New Hampshire, we have what we call America's Stonehenge. And I'm sure you're probably familiar with that, Mike. And
yeah.
Got a chance to visit, and I was talking to a forensic geologist when I was there, and he was showing me the setup and the way these stones laid out and that there are stones like this in other places around the world. And I said, what this kind of reminds me of and the way these stones are put together, I said, when you go to a science museum and they've got that cone where there's like these convex pieces of plastic that are one at one end of the hall, one at the other, and you can go and whisper. And because of the way it's laid out, you can actually hear the whisper on the other side if you're standing in front of that area. I said, what if they were utilizing that technology to communicate to a much further place by having these power stones in places that were energetic portals and not realizing how they were doing it? But it was like an early transmitter, an early CB radio that would give information back and forth to these different cultures. And he stopped and he's like, that's really a fascinating concept. I'd never even thought of something like that. But to realize how many different cultures around the world built similar sites, similar layouts without having any way to be around one another or share the way that they did it, it would almost make sense that there might be a communication element to the way these stones are built. And maybe it was an original kind of shortwave radio to other cultures.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. So, when we talk portals, stargates, this sort of thing, we always imagine, going someplace else in the universe, but it doesn't have to be that. It could be to some other place here on Earth. We've already talked about other dimensions. But yeah, another use of a stargate would be as a form of communication for other cultures to be able to interact with each other. And, we see around the world some really just uncanny similarities between different types of structures, like the pyramid at Chichen Itza looking eerily similar to the step pyramid at Saqqara, or you have a lot of these different symbols used all over the world that you see them everywhere, like the spiral symbol or the beans with the handbags and things like this. So it's our traditional academia tells us that these cultures didn't have any connection with each other for thousands and thousands of years until a more modern era. But when you see these type of similarities all over the world from these cultures that were not supposed to have been connected, it leaves you scratching your head and saying, well, no, they actually did have some sort of connection, whether that was physical or, like you said, Dave, some sort of communication network that they may have had in place.
Tying this in, and I know that you're fascinated with ghosts and communication as well as an investigator, and you and I have been to many different places together that are very active. It does seem that there are times when we're communicating with what we believe to be ghosts. When we're recording, sometimes we'll get like a crack and a pop, almost like something energetically is opening to allow you to hear through whatever means is being used to communicate. And there's also light phenomena that is seen at some locations that seems to be almost like a flashbulb going off just prior to a witnessing of a Bigfoot or alien craft, or I should say unidentified craft in the sky. So maybe these portals are like TVs coming to light. We're getting a quick glimpse at the channels as we're moving through that guide and allowing ourselves to see some of these bits. What's your take on the fact that maybe what we're experiencing when it comes to a haunting is nothing more than mini portals that are just replaying sounds and effects from past or possibly future inhabitants?
Yeah, I've covered this a lot of different ways in my various work. So like the last book that I had, Travels Through Time, talked about a number of these, what we might call a haunting and that type of phenomenon. It could very well be time slips, or we're communicating with, you know, maybe somebody or something from another dimension and that sort of thing. When it comes to like these flashes of lights, people have witnessed like balls of lights near Bigfoot. So classically, when we think of a portal or a stargate, we think of, you know, like this giant circle with a tunnel and we walk through it. But that's not really how that would work out in nature. And the film Interstellar, I thought, addressed this pretty well, where their wormhole was actually a spherical entrance. That it's not just going to be a circle sitting out there in the middle of space, in three-dimensional space. It's going to be a sphere. So when we're talking about these different orbs, or what we might think is ball lightning, or you know, these giant balls of light near Sasquatch and what have you, this may actually be their mode of transportation. These actually may be the physical manifestation of portals. And because our modern cultural context views those as these, you know, giant circle openings, it might not be that. It might be these smaller spheres that are floating in the air, or manifesting what might seem to us as random. But if you have an entity like a Sasquatch that is using this as their mode of transportation, there could be some deliberate intention by them in how to use these.
What was one of the biggest surprises regarding, you know, power lines, ley lines, portals, stargates? What was one of the biggest surprises for you in researching for this book?
Oh, that's a good question. 'Cause there's a lot of content in here. I mean, you know, I think just really how deep the rabbit hole goes. So seeing how so many of these ancient cultures throughout, you know, time immemorial are so connected to each other with so many similar concepts, whether that's, you know, Ireland, Egypt, you know, and they're trying to do the same type of thing. But even in our modern day and era, people have attempted things like Nikola Tesla. He was so far ahead of his time in trying to do things like utilize the Earth's energy, but he was a scholarly man and he had done a lot of study there of the ancient sites. And he actually, when he was a younger man in Serbia, had some very interesting stories about astral projection. He was, you know, very attuned to the metaphysical world, and he was bringing these things forth in his science. And if people would have just believed in him a bit more, then maybe we would have had some of these technologies a little bit quicker.
We have to take our final break for this hour. We will return. Mike Ricksecker, our guest, right here on the Paranormal 360. Many different cultures around the world talk of power places. They chose these places specifically because of the power that came from them. Was this power something that has always existed, or did it come later because so many places had been built on lines that nobody actually understood or realized? Did it create a circuit? Did it build a circuit? which came first, the chicken or the egg in this kind of instance? Portals to the Stars, Inside Stargates, Atlantis, and Secrets of Ancient Egypt. Mike Ricksecker, our guest on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. You know, it is interesting. You have to wonder, could the power come from these things being built in these places at the specific spots that they needed to be? Or did those places already exist and it almost called out to have something be built there?
Well, I think, you know, we talked earlier about the, the power from the earth, you know, manifesting in these locations, and all, you know, starting with the earth's core. But there is something to be said for what the ancients did and the sites that they built, actually enhanced these locations that, whether it was a stone circle or a temple or some of these other structures, pyramids, that, you know, was able to harness that energy and be able to make it, whether it was more pliable, more energetic, stronger, these sorts of things. So you set up a network of those. In an area, you look at the UK, you're finding stone circles all over the place, and many of them were related and connected to each other. Or you look at even the mound builders here in America, you find that many of these mound sites were aligned to each other, and they're very far away from each other, but aligned to each other, and the ancients were using this for different purposes.
You would think that if these kind of secrets were uncovered, that there would be a lot of detailed information about this, something to pass on. Was it probably dealt with more in an oral tradition, or do we know about this? Do our governments know about these portals, know about these kinds of PowerPoints, and elect to keep that something hidden from us?
Well, yeah, anything like that, of course, having spent some time in government agencies. There's a lot that the government is certainly hiding from us. But, you know, a lot of these things just got lost to time. What was Stonehenge used for? You know, there's three different
modes. But isn't that weird?
And they're all,
you know, losing a recipe to a family cookie or to the perfect steak is something that I could see just getting swept under the carpet by accident. But portals, being able to communicate through time and space, being able to utilize energy in a way, it seems like that would be something that would supersede, that there would be enough people that are familiar with it, that would have been something that was continually engaged all the way to today's place in history.
Well, and we do see it in a number of aspects, like in ancient Egypt, because they wrote down everything. So we do have records of that there in Egypt. And I know when we get to that segment, we'll get a little bit more detailed about that. But, it's kind of the way ancient history works, Dave. You have a lot of cultures that, for one, there was the Great Cataclysm, whatever that was. There's a lot of argument and debate, but we know what happened. We know that, even if, minor ones, I don't know how minor a volcano is, but you have things like that, volcanoes, famine, natural disasters that will wipe out entire civilizations or absolutely decimate them. You had barbaric tribes that, it wasn't, just taking over land back then. It was genocide. You would wipe out an entire culture, and whether it was their deities or, their sacred sites, you would obliterate them because it was something that you were adamantly opposed to, and you're going to just wipe this other civilization off the earth. And it's unfortunate, but that happened. And if there were any survivors, then those peoples are literally just surviving. It gets back down to the basics of we need to hunt, we need to put a roof over our head, these sorts of things, and our higher technologies that we have, we can't worry about those. Even if you even had any survivors that knew how to use those, like, I spent most of my career, aside from writing, in the IT industry. If we had a massive cataclysm right now and you asked me to, build a house, I have a little bit of knowledge from how, my dad was a handyman, but I probably wouldn't be your go-to guy for that. But if I survived and all of our construction workers didn't, we might be a little hosed there. So it's that type of thing, that's happened throughout history.
Yeah, yeah. The world is in a bad place if I'm one of the last ones left to help rebuild things. I can't even deal with the Legos and the instructions. So I get that. It just the concepts that these things are so big and they mean and the possibilities of them mean so much. It's hard to believe that that so much of it has been lost to us. And you know, I mean, we've heard for years that, you know, that there is a race or are alien races that are around us and that they watch over us. They kind of step in when we get to places when we're dangerous. But you would think that that would have happened with the native cultures when we came in here and took over the lands and took it away from them and, you know, created genocidal moments. And you would have thought that there would have been times then that these beings would step forward to help right those wrongs, but it doesn't seem to exist. So I think that's what keeps so many people on the fence post of being skeptical instead of accepting that there are these different possibilities that have always existed around us.
Well, and, you know, I think, I've heard a lot of that too, that, you know, these extraterrestrial or alien cultures would want to step in and, but what would be their motivation for doing so? I mean, I could have ones that are living alongside us that are maybe in another dimension. If we're doing something to destroy the planet, well, that would also be their homeworld. But when it comes to our interaction with each other, if we're not like, okay, the atomic bomb. Yes. You know, maybe there's a lot of people who speculate they came in and had some conversations with us about that. And that was that. It's actually part of the Admiral Byrd story, too. Thankfully, knock on wood, we have not had, any atomic warfare since then. But some of these other things, they might consider minor between each other, or maybe it doesn't matter to them so much. I think we put a little bit too much into this thinking that a race of beings that we don't quite understand for some reason might, you know, be ultra benevolent for some reason. But they might be totally indifferent to us unless we're doing something to harm them.
We are going to wrap up here for this hour. Mike Ricksecker will stay with us into the next hour as we discuss secrets of lost civilizations and their cosmic connections. We'll do that right here on the program. I'm Dave Schrader. You're listening to your home for the very best in strange and supernatural. This is the Paranormal 360.